Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we have some major local news stories, starting with a bomb threat from a group claiming ties to the ISIS terrorist group, which diverted a plane heading right here to San Diego on Sunday. Senator Ben Wesso, whose district includes much of East County, has been arrested for drunk driving in Sacramento. Can his political career survive? Hear what's happened to other California legislators arrested on DUI charges. While the nation reels over the Ferguson, Missouri shooting of an unarmed teen by police, raising questions over police brutality, right here in our own community, a string of allegations have surfaced claiming excessive use of force and racial profiling by Metropolitan Transit security officers. The latest is a brutal beating caught on video aboard a trolley in La Mesa. Public News Service has provided us with national news headlines, including an update on a big earthquake in California's Napa Valley over the weekend. We'll also have the latest on San Diego's minimum wage ordinance, help for homeless veterans, and news on a fire that hit close to home in Descanso, home of KNSJ Radio's broadcasting. Plus, we'll have some audio clips from a presentation by Border Angels founder Enrique Morones at the United Church of Christ in La Mesa, where church members are pitching in to help immigrant children from Central America because, their pastor says, Jesus was once a refugee. You'll also hear about a state proposal to remove wilderness designation from hundreds of acres of public land in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, and we'll bring you some tips for keeping cool in this hot weather locally. All this and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. A bomb threat tied to the terrorist group ISIS forced a plane bound for San Diego from Dallas to land in Phoenix on Sunday. American Airlines diverted its Flight 362 after a group claiming ties to ISIS tweeted a threat stating explosives were on board. The tweet from the group calling itself Lizard Squad suggested the target was Sony Online Entertainment president John Smedley, who was on board the flight. Earlier in the day, Lizard Squad hackers took down Sony's PlayStation network after tweeting that Lizard Squad had planted the ISIS flag on Sony's servers. The tweet was sent with the hashtag ISIS and Jihad. The hackers also posted a tweet to Smedley's Twitter account with video showing the World Trade Towers being hit by planes during the September 11th terrorist attacks. The tweet had the hashtag PrayForFlight362, the plane that Smedley was on. ISIS, the jihadist terrorist network that originated in Syria, later invaded Iraq, where it has killed and committed atrocities against people who refused to convert to Islam. ISIS has declared an Islamic State and vowed retribution against the United States after American military planes bombed ISIS forces in an effort to save hundreds of thousands of displaced Iraqi people and U.S. Embassy personnel. Another tweet by Lizard Squad suggests that U.S. bombing of Iraq is a motive for the group's actions. The tweet states, "Kuffar don't get to play video games until bombing of the ISIL stops." Kuffar is a derogatory Arabic term for non-Muslims. Sony's executive John Smedley tweeted that his plane was diverted in mid-flight. He added, "Not going to discuss more than that. Justice will find these guys." Passengers were grounded for 4 hours in Phoenix. CBS reports that no explosives were found, and the flight ultimately continued to San Diego, where it landed safely here. A statement issued by Sony indicated that the FBI is investigating the threat and that further details cannot be released as this has now become a matter of national security. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
State Senator Ben Hueso, a Democrat whose district includes large portions of East County, was arrested at 3:30 a.m. Friday morning in Sacramento for driving under the influence of alcohol, the Sacramento Bee reported. The California Highway Patrol said Hueso was driving the wrong way on 15th Street in his Ford Excursion when he was stopped, according to Fox TV in Sacramento. His blood alcohol level was 0.08% or higher, the CHP has indicated. The Los Angeles Times reports Hueso attended a Latino caucus dinner where alcohol was served before his arrest. A photo of Hueso, shirt tails hanging out, and other legislators partying at the event was tweeted by a fellow legislator earlier in the evening, then deleted after the arrest. The website state.com reports that audio also has surface of the legislators singing on a Capitol balcony in the wee hours. Hueso is slated to appear in court this week. Senator Hueso previously served in the Assembly and on San Diego City Council before winning election to the State Senate in a special election in 2013, filling a vacancy left by Juan Vargas' election to Congress. Hueso, the son of immigrants, represents the 40th State Senate District, which is 67% Hispanic. The district spans three counties, San Diego, Riverside, and Imperial. In San Diego, the border region district stretches from Coronado through the South Bay and east to include Bonita, Boulevard, Campo, Jacumba, Potrero, and Mount Laguna in East County. City News Service reports that Hueso has issued a statement which reads, "I am truly and profoundly sorry for the unacceptably poor personal judgment which I demonstrated last night. As someone who cares deeply about public safety, I sincerely apologize to my family, my constituents, and my colleagues in the Senate for breaching the trust they've all placed in me." The senator concludes, "I accept completely personal responsibility for any actions and any punishments that ultimately come my way as a result of this incident. I will also engage in immediate corrective actions to ensure this kind of behavior, personal conduct, is never repeated." Does the DUI arrest spell the end of Senator Hueso's political future? Not necessarily. While nationwide some legislators have lost elections or opted not to run again after drunk driving scandals, the website StopTheMadness.org indicates that several legislators around the nation have been reelected even after being convicted of driving under the influence. In California, four members of the state legislature have been arrested on DUI charges over the past 5 years. Assemblyman Martin Garrick, a Republican from Solana Beach, pleaded no contest to driving with a blood alcohol level nearly twice the legal limit in 2011. He was sentenced to rehab, community service, and loss of his driver's license for 4 months. Garrick left office in 2012 due to term limits. Assemblyman Roger Hernandez, a Democrat from West Covina, was arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence in 2012, but charges were later dismissed after a jury found him not guilty. He was reelected and remains in office. Senator Roy Ashburn, a Republican from Bakersfield, pleaded no contest after an arrest for drunken driving after leaving a gay bar in 2010. Ashburn later ran for supervisor in Kern County and lost, but was appointed by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to the State Uninsurance Appeals Board, where he continues to serve. Events hosted by legislative caucuses, lobbyists, and other groups in the state capitol frequently serve alcohol, making overindulgence an occupational hazard. Free ride service is a perk available to any California legislator who needs a driver for any reason. The legislator merely needs to call the sergeant-at-arms to request one. Which begs the question, why do so many legislators sworn to uphold the law fail to either abstain from overindulging or making a simple phone call to make use of the state's free designated drivers for its elected officials? Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Surveillance video of two Metropolitan Transit Service security officers brutally beating a passenger aboard a trolley in La Mesa has prompted suspension of the officers and a police investigation. Our news partner, 10 News, obtained video through a public records request after a passenger who witnessed the beating tipped off the 10 News team. The video shows officers beating the man with batons for nearly 7 minutes on August 18th. 10 News later interviewed the victim, Philippe Vadoy. He says he was assaulted by the officers after rolling a cigarette at the station and then boarding the trolley. He says he did nothing wrong and did not smoke the cigarette, but was ordered off the trolley and then beaten repeatedly by the officers. Bedoy does have a criminal record. However, he was not charged with any crime related to this incident. La Mesa police say they were initially called to assist MTS officers, but MTS declined to turn the man over to the police. After seeing the security video, MTS then asked La Mesa police to investigate and determine if charges should be filed against the security officers. Now, an East County Magazine investigation reveals that this incident may be only the tip of a larger iceberg. A Facebook page titled Stop MTS Harassment and Brutality was actually launched back on March 3rd by Bertha Gutierrez of Chula Vista. Posts and links at the site reveal at least three additional excessive use of force cases involving MTS security officers, including two where victims allege racial profiling against Hispanic people, racial slurs, and taunts by the officers. Emmanuel Weimer, a City College student, alleged that on February 23rd, he was, quote, brutally beaten, tortured, and mangled by an MTS officer while other MTS officers assisted, unquote. The incident occurred near the San Ysidro trolley stop. Weimer says the MTS officer punched, kicked, kneed, and handcuffed him after he asked that police be called, and then he says officers mocked him and told him to go cross the border and get the Mexican police. Bystanders ultimately called police, who arrested Weimer for assault. He claims he was arrested to cover up hate crimes by MTS officers. Charges against Weimer were later dropped, City Times reported, and the victim says he plans to file a complaint against MTS. Back in September 2013, a witness provided a cell phone video to media showing MTS officers using force to subdue an Iraq War veteran in Otay Mesa. Christian Thompson had a therapy dog that the officers claimed acted aggressively. A witness said the dog was not aggressive, but that officers used a taser on Thompson after he answered their questions sarcastically. He was charged with disorderly conduct and pleaded not guilty. A video of that incident can be viewed on our website. In yet another case, a man and his wife, both Mexican, have filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against MTS over a beating by MTS security officers that resulted in a fractured wrist. The couple was accused of riding the trolley without tickets, 10 News reported last November. The victim told media that officers began to beat him after he took out a cell phone to record racial slurs that he says they made against him. MTS has a policy of not commenting on pending litigation or investigations. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we have some updates for you on the national news scene from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, August 25th, 2014. I'm Mary Sherman. Our nationwide news features eight stories, including the strongest earthquake in a quarter century rocks Northern California, the Obama administration urged to save some federal lands, an investigation into the false perceptions that cast some crime victims as criminals, and a look at the benefits of immigrant driver's permits. Our top story, emergency officials in Northern California continue to assess the damage after a 6.1 magnitude earthquake struck early Sunday, injuring over 120 people. Governor Jerry Brown declared a state of emergency for Napa, Solano, and Sonoma counties. Inspectors found damage to more than 15 buildings in Napa, and more evaluations are expected today. At a morning news conference, Napa Public Works Director Jack LaRochelle said 30 water mains were broken and requiring repairs, but delivered good news about the area water supply.
Our water plants were fine. They were not damaged. That's the good news, the upside. So we are feeding water. The tank levels did start going down right after the earthquake. So those have been stabilized and starting to come back up.
The earthquake woke people as far away as San Francisco and was felt as far east as Sacramento and as far south as Santa Cruz. Protecting the San Gabriel Mountains in Southern California may be moving in a new direction. Five members of the California congressional delegation are calling on President Obama to use his authority to protect the federal lands by designating the area a national monument. Lori Abbott reports.
Congresswoman Judy Chu supports the move since her bill for a national recreation area has stalled in Congress. She says the forest has more than 3 million visitors each year, but services and resources have not kept up.
We need better signage, safer trails, more trash collection, more staffing and visitor services, better preservation of historic and natural resources, and we need them right now.
The U.S. Forest Service is holding a public discussion on the matter Tuesday at the Performing Arts Center of Baldwin Park.
Federal health leaders say over 200 cases of West Nile virus disease have been reported in people nationwide this year. And as August draws to a close, New Mexico has its first human case.
Dr. Paul Edestad is a public health veterinarian with the State Department of Health. He says a 45-year-old woman from San Juan County is recovering at home after contracting a virus that has killed several people in New Mexico.
Last year we had 38 cases. Unfortunately, there were three fatalities with those 38 cases. The most we've ever had is the first year we had human cases back in 2003. That year we had 209 cases and four fatalities.
Edestad adds that in people, West Nile can cause flu-like symptoms such as fever, nausea, headache, and muscle aches. He says a small percentage of those infected can develop meningitis or encephalitis. Both are infections that attack the brain and can be fatal, especially in those over the age of 50. I'm Troy Wild.
An update on the investigation into the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. Governor Jay Nixon said he is sticking by the prosecuting attorney in the case despite complaints from many black leaders. St. Louis County prosecuting attorney Bob McCullough has been criticized for his close ties to the police. His father was a police officer killed in the line of duty by a black man. McCullough began presenting evidence this week to a 12-person grand jury that will decide whether to indict Officer Darren Wilson in Brown's shooting death. With the fatal shooting in Ferguson, a national debate over racial injustice is heating up. Amid all the finger-pointing, there are forgotten victims left alone as they face the financial, physical, and emotional toll of violent crime. In a year-long ColorLines.com investigation in Chicago, reporter Carla Murphy found that resources to support crime victims are scarce. And she says there's one victimized population that's getting the short end of the stick, largely due to false perceptions.
Young black men in particular, say 17 to 30, they're very much cast first as criminals, and whatever bad thing happens to them after, it's understood as they might deserve it or they were doing something wrong.
There are both national and state compensation programs to support crime victims. In Illinois, those who decide who gets victim compensation rely heavily on police reports. When the crime involves young men of color, Murphy says it's often labeled as gang-related. Whether factual or not, she says it means the victim is not deemed innocent and becomes ineligible for support. No one likes higher utility bills, and while the company says the increase is needed to keep up with everyday maintenance, consumer advocates say Connecticut Light and Power's request is out of line. We get the story from Mike Clifford.
John Erlinghauser with AARP Connecticut says what makes this rate hike request unusual is the fact that CLNP is seeking a major increase in fixed monthly charges for more than a million local consumers.
Almost 50% increase in the fixed customer service charge, and it'll result in an $114 a year increase in bills before you even turn on a light in your home.
The utility says it is facing skyrocketing costs and needs the money to maintain the system. There will be a telephone town hall for AARP members today to get local consumers up to date on the rate request, which Erlinghauser says will increase the average customer's bill by $150 per year.
The Colorado DMV is chipping away at the estimated 45,000 immigrants who are now eligible for a state-issued driver's license. Stephanie Carson has more on why the state's insurance industry says more licensed drivers will be better for everyone.
It's been almost a month since the state began issuing driver's permits to them, and members of the state's insurance industry say immigrants aren't the only people to benefit. Angela Thorpe with State Farm says the education and testing process is valuable to everyone on the road.
First, ensuring all drivers have access to auto insurance, it's going to help control costs. And secondly, licensed drivers have greater awareness of the rules of the road, which promotes safer driving.
The availability of immigrant licenses comes as a result of the Colorado Road and Community Safety Act, signed into law this year. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
A new school year can be particularly challenging for parents of kids with asthma who want to make sure their child will be able to manage asthma in the school environment. Kathleen Shanovich is a pediatric nurse practitioner for UW Health. She says it's important for parents to meet with the school nurse.
What is really helpful for school nurses is to have the family stop by, meet with them, and provide orders for sure their albuterol or emergency inhalers to be available to the child at school.
Asthma is the leading cause of school absenteeism, accounting for more than 10 million missed school days a year. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Last week, San Diego City Council voted to override the mayor's veto of a minimum wage increase. That means the increase will take effect, giving raises to low-wage workers throughout the city as well as sick days to all workers citywide. But some business interests are now trying to put a measure on the ballot to overturn the minimum wage ordinance, and they are being accused of deceptive tactics to trick voters into signing petitions to put their measure on the ballot. City Council President Todd Gloria posted a video on Instagram showing a signature gatherer asking him, "Have you signed the petition so the state can't force the city of San Diego to increase the minimum wage yet?" The state has nothing to do with the city's ordinance. Raise Up San Diego, a group supporting the raise in the minimum wage, has now launched a Don't Sign It campaign warning voters to reject deceptive tactics. Norma Rodriguez with Raise Up San Diego says that although the pro-business group backing the ballot initiative calls itself the San Diego Small Business Coalition, it's actually funded by large corporations and out-of-town interests, KPBS reports. Raise Up San Diego plans to send out its own volunteers and paid workers to stand next to signature gatherers and make sure that voters know the truth. City Councilwoman Sherry Leitner warned the public not to fall for lies told by signature gatherers, including claims that the petition is to support the minimum wage proposal when actually it would repeal it. She urged, "Don't sign it." However, Jason Rowe, spokesman for the San Diego Small Business Coalition, called Raise Up San Diego's plan a, quote, "voter harassment campaign," unquote. The minimum wage ordinance would raise the minimum wage paid in the city from $9 to $9.75 an hour on January 1st and require employers to provide 5 earned 6 days a year. Wages would increase gradually to $11.50 by January 1st, 2017, and in 2019 the minimum wage would be tied to inflation. Opponents of the minimum wage have just 30 days to gather 33,866 signatures to trigger a referendum on the increase. If it qualifies for the ballot, the minimum wage raise hike would not take effect. Instead, it would be postponed until after San Diego's voters weigh in. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Congresswoman Susan Davis has just announced that $1.2 million in federal grants will be coming to San Diego to fight homelessness among our veterans, specifically Vietnam veterans in our region. Congresswoman Davis, a San Diego Democrat whose district also includes La Mesa and El Cajon in East County, serves as the ranking member on the House Military Personnel Subcommittee. She says she has talked to many veterans living on our streets and seen their problems firsthand. It's important that they know that we have not forgotten, especially after the sacrifices they have made for our freedoms, she says. We must not rest until the thousands of homeless, including our veterans, are no longer living on San Diego's streets. Nationwide, $300 million in grants have been given out under the VA's Supportive Services, which provides services to very low-income veterans and their families who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. Funds from these grants will allow veterans and their families to get temporary financial aid on rent payments, utility payments, security deposits, and moving costs. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
At the United Church of Christ in La Mesa, the congregation has made a commitment to help children and families from Central America who have fled violence in their homelands. Over 60,000 have sought refuge in America, and many of those families have wound up in detention centers right here in San Diego and even in East County. Wearing a Save the Children tie, local pediatrician Dr. Richard Short introduced guest speaker Enrique Morones, founder of Border Angels, who spoke at a forum held by the church on August 17th. Morones emphasized the importance of not waiting for governments to take action, since the families are suffering right now. He said, "Everybody looks to the president or the mayor, but what can we do?" He went on to explain that the Central American refugees are fleeing to many nations, not just the United States, and he voiced dismay at those who have confronted immigrant children with hate, but voiced hope that many more have opened their hearts in a spirit of help. He gave a chilling eyewitness account of the confrontation in Murrieta recently, where anti-immigration protesters awaited the first busloads of the immigrants in our region.
All of a sudden, the buses are about to enter the facility. Murrieta police get in front of the buses and stop the buses. So I told one of the officers, I go, "Why are you stopping the buses?" "Sir, we know what we're doing." I go, "No, well, you're kind of inviting the protesters to get in the street now. I go, why in the world would you stop the buses? So that's exactly what happened. About half of the protesters got in front of the buses, started banging that great American flag against the window, and had all these signs, and started yelling all these horrible things at these children. And these children don't speak English, but they can understand hate. Yeah. And I saw the worst of the American spirit there, when I saw those people yelling at these children. Because regardless of how you feel about the issue, regardless, these are children. And we got to love our children.
But when the buses carrying moms and children later came to a Chula Vista facility, the scene was far different, Morones told the audience.
When they came to San Diego to the Chula Vista facility, you all saw what happened. It was just the opposite. It was moms and children that, through their own initiative, they were welcoming the buses and the children. That brought tears to my eyes, too. I saw it on the news. I thought, that's beautiful. So the next morning, we had a press conference. We must have had 50 different press people there, and a couple of people from the community showed up. And we just said, you know, we are not Marietta. We're going to welcome these children and treat them with love, because these are our children. These are all of our children. And a society is judged on how we treat our children. And the whole world saw that. And I believe that that could be our Rosa Parks moment. It could be what turns this immigration debate around.
Border Angels swiftly took in over 50 tons of donated goods, clothing, food, and toys, enough to fill half a football field. The group has lined up free legal services to aid the immigrants and has also intervened directly to protect their safety. Some have faced dangers in detention centers beyond just overcrowding. Morones told a frightening story about what a refugee family at a temporary shelter in Santee faced and the steps that Border Angels took to help them.
And the woman's daughter, they tried to rape her last night. I go, what? So I find out where they're at. They're at a church in Santee. I race over there. I call the sheriffs, first of all. So the sheriffs go over there, take a report. They verify what we said, and then I call the sheriffs again, and they go, so what happened? And they told me pretty much what the woman had, what the mom is. Ended up telling me about her daughter. And then I said, so where are they now? And the sheriff's office says, oh, they're still there. And I go, how about the man? Did you arrest him? No, he's still there. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. So I raced over there. And I go, I'm gonna go get him. So I raced over there, and as I race over to this church, there's a little boy outside, and he comes running out, and he hugs me. And he's obviously a Latino little boy. They were from Guatemala. And I didn't know there was a little boy there. And I go, oh, hi, you know, you okay? And he goes, that was my sister and my mom. And I go, oh, tell them that we're leaving right now. And he goes, how about my other brother? And I go, oh, yeah, all of us. So the four of them come out, and we take them to the Border Angel offices. By this time, it was pretty late. It was around 10:30 at night on a Monday. They had to report to court on Tuesday morning. So I drive downtown, and I'm looking for a place for them to stay. We have a really large network of host families that want to help us out. It was the week before Comic-Con. There was a doctor's convention in town, so all the hotels downtown were full. And it was so late that it was kind of hard to get the word out to the host families. So we put them up in a hotel downtown. We finally found a place where they could stay. The next day is Tuesday. And on Tuesdays, Border Angels offers free immigration attorneys. So I called the attorney that was coming that day, and I go, could you please come a little earlier? I want you to meet this woman. And he does meet her. And we show all the paperwork. And I said, because we want to be able to help this family and so forth. And we are helping that family. You've seen them a little bit in the news. Not them as individuals, but the case, because what happened was, after we had them for a couple of days, fed them, got them clothes, attorneys, and so on and so forth, we needed a host family. So we sent out an email, and about 25 families responded. So of course, we do background checks. So we find this one family that says, I'll take him, his wife, he's got three boys himself. He takes them to where they live. They live in another part of town. Well, all of a sudden, he starts calling me, and he goes, getting death threats. My restaurant, they're harassing me at my restaurant. I go, what? So his name is Mark Lane, and his restaurant is called Papa's Fresh Fish. It's on Ocean View Boulevard. So I encourage all of you to go to that fish restaurant and buy a lot of fish and have lunch and dinner, because what happened, while these people were trying to scare him and threaten him, and I got the police involved in this right away, and the DA's office offered him protection, his business has quadrupled. His business has quadrupled, but that's not enough. We want it to be 10 times more.
Still, more help is needed. Morona says Border Angels needs water, toys, large suitcases, backpacks, gift cards for taking the children to the zoo or museums during their stay here, for instance, as well as cash. More families willing to be temporary host families or foster parents are also needed. Most of the unaccompanied minors coming here have family that they seek to reunite with, but that can be challenging. Moronis told of a 10-year-old who thought America would be like a small town where he could just give the first name of his relative and be found. Once relatives are located, the vast majority of the child immigrants are sent to stay with family while awaiting hearings to decide if they will be granted asylum, permanent residency, or deported. In some cases, the family members are not undocumented but actually have legal status in the United States. Some children with no family here are being held in facilities in Lemon Grove and El Cajon, where they stay an average of a couple of weeks, learning English, getting medical attention, and in some cases, winding up with foster parents who are actually willing to raise the children. Parents in Central America are so desperate to save their children from death at the hands of gangs and drug cartels that some are entrusting them to strangers, and the way here is very dangerous. Smugglers lie and tell families that if youngsters come here, they will receive visas and can bring other family members later on, and some children perish or are harmed on the journey en route. The influx has slowed as word spreads that this is not the situation. Moronis predicts the number will likely reach 80,000 children arriving at U.S. borders and giving themselves up to Border Patrol by year's end. Mexican immigration has already slowed 40%, but the new wave of Central Americans are now the highest population of immigrants in America. Many of those coming here now are the grandchildren of people caught up in civil wars or experiencing the results of NAFTA and CAFTA, the free trade agreements that largely destroyed commerce and agricultural jobs in Mexico and Central America, sending people north across the border. The number one reason for Latino immigrants to come here is the desire to feed their families, and number two is a hope to reunite with family members, Morona says. Nationwide, about 35% of all undocumented immigrants are not Latinos. They are Europeans and Asians, mainly, whose visas have expired. The other 65% are Latinos, but there are no visas available for them, says Moronis, who seeks to dispel two myths about immigration. Myth number one, people say get in line, but there is no line, he says, for those of Latino heritage. Those applying are asked how much money they make, and those most in need are not able to get visas to come here if they are from Mexico, Central, or South America. Moronis says his own parents did come here on a visa before he was born, but these are no longer available to people in similar circumstances. Myth number two is that we are a country of laws, he adds, and he notes that in the past, American law allowed child labor, slavery, and prevented women from voting. He states, some laws are immoral and need to be changed. Other myths are that immigrants are apt to be criminals. The Justice Department has said that undocumented immigrants are actually 10 times less likely to be criminals than other people in America, Moronis stated. It's also a myth that the immigrants could have serious health issues. Health problems found among them thus far are no worse than those among immigrants crowded into Ellis Island in the past, and the conditions can easily be treated, Moronis notes. So what will become of the 60,000 unaccompanied children who have already come here? Will they stay here? Moronis asks. We hope most will, because most are very real cases of asylum. He hopes people across America will open hearts and homes to help, because, he says, Americans are good people. Border Angels has asked the Obama administration to take executive action.
I happened to talk on the phone and actually meet with a guy. You might not have heard of him. He's the Irish Obama, Barack Obama. And I'm going to go see him in a few weeks. And one of the things that happened was we had a conversation about what was going on. And I said, Mr. President, I propose something that we can call Aquí, a program called Aquí No Allá, which means here, not there. And that program, they've actually implemented it, and it's a program where if I'm one of those families in Guatemala, because what's happening is they're being threatened by these gangs and so forth, that their children will be killed and those types of things. So I gotta leave, because if I don't leave, they're not gonna see tomorrow. They're gonna be killed. They're literally gonna be killed. So instead of having to take that dangerous journey through Central America, through Mexico, in order to turn themselves into the Border Patrol, because they're not getting into the country. They're turning themselves into Border Patrol. It's not a security issue. They're turning themselves in. So when they turn themselves into the Border Patrol, instead of having to do that, they should apply for the visa in their home country. So why don't we expand that presence in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, aquí, no allá, here, not there. So that's what we're doing now. Well, that's what the U.S. government is doing now. It's not the perfect solution, but it's a step in the right direction.
Moronis reminded the audience at the La Mesa Church that many of their ancestors faced the same kind of anti-immigrant attitude now facing Central American and Mexican immigrants. Benjamin Franklin wanted to send German immigrants back to Germany, he observed. There was a time that people said that about the Polish and the Irish, Moronis added. Whatever happened to give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, he asked, quoting the inscription on the Statue of Liberty. He asks why the U.S. gives billions of dollars in aid to countries in the Middle East, but not to neighbors in Central America who are now in need. We could be doing a lot more, he concludes. We've got to help those countries so that they can help themselves. To some, the task of helping out amid such a large influx of people may seem daunting, but Moronis recalls a visit by Mahatma Gandhi's grandson locally when he told a story of a man finding a large number of starfish that had washed ashore. When he threw one back into the sea, he was asked why, since it would make no difference to the many more that would die. Gandhi's grandson replied that it would make a difference to the one starfish that he saved. Moronis concludes, that's the power of one, and he urged everyone present to take action to help immigrants in need, especially the children. After the forum in La Mesa, church members and guests lined up to purchase T-shirts to support the cause. The powder blue shirts, printed in English and Spanish, read, Love has no borders. Amor no tiene fronteras. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Over 50,000 unaccompanied minors fleeing Central America have come to the U.S. seeking help to escape desperate situations. Now some California lawmakers want to assure that these kids caught up in a humanitarian crisis will receive full legal hearings to determine if they may be eligible for asylum, refugee status, or deportation. A new bill would provide $3 million to nonprofit groups to expand legal services for the children. After visiting a detention center housing children recently, Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins from San Diego told reporters, I think we all came away with a feeling that these kids really needed our support, that it was about their safety, their due process, the ability to look beyond bigger political considerations and deal with a humanitarian crisis. Governor Jerry Brown announced the measure, stating, Helping these young people navigate our legal system is the decent thing to do and is consistent with the progressive spirit of California. The language has been added as an urgency measure in a budget cleanup bill, the Sacramento Bee reports. That means it could take effect immediately, with funds available in just a few weeks if passed and signed into law. Atkins believes that Democrats have enough votes to pass the measure without a single Republican vote. The measure faces opposition from Republicans, including Assemblyman Don Wagner from Murrieta, where protesters forced buses full of immigrants to turn around, casting a national spotlight on the issue. Wagner has called the bill an inappropriate use of taxpayer money. But Atkins says the money will come from savings found elsewhere in the budget. Another bill has been introduced by Senator Daryl Steinberg. His bill would direct state courts to evaluate the cases being presented by immigrant minors and often overlook first step for them to obtain legal residency from a federal court. Immigrants who obtain legal permanent status are shielded from deportation and become eligible for citizenship. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. A wildland fire in Descanso on Sunday briefly threatened structures. The blaze started in light, flashy fuels near the Descanso Library at River Drive and Viejas Boulevard. Multiple firefighting units responded to the blaze, including CAL FIRE and the U.S. Forest Service. Fortunately, thanks to quick intervention by firefighters, the brush fire was halted at 8 acres with no structures lost. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, broadcasting in Descanso in the heart of East County, this is Miriam Raftery.
If you shopped at Food for Less in the past week or so, you likely encountered picketers. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which represents grocery store employees at most of the grocery stores in San Diego, have renewed their contract with major grocery store chain owners, except Food for Less. The chain has about a dozen stores countywide, including East County locations in El Cajon, Lemon Grove, and Santee. The workers have not called a strike, but they have been holding informational picketing to educate the public and ask the public to support their efforts by avoiding shopping at Food for Less, for now. According to a flyer from the union, Food for Less has proposed to cut hours, transfer higher-paid work to lower-paid employees, pay a smaller share into the Workers' Health and Welfare Fund, and has rejected the union's previous agreement to provide new employees wage rates above the minimum wage. Food for Less is owned by Kroger, which also owns Ralph's, one of the largest and most profitable grocery store companies in the U.S. Just last month, Kroger announced that it made over $500 million in profits just in the first quarter of 2014. East County Magazine contacted Kroger's for comment, but the company did not respond. The chain is highly successful, yet Food for Less workers, who are mostly Latino and serve customers in the Latino community, earn less than their counterparts at Ralph's, which is also owned by Kroger. Food for Less is a no-frills grocery store where the customers bag their own groceries at the checkout. The question is, should workers at Food for Less be paid less than the workers doing the same exact work at Ralph's and other grocery stores? Lourdes Ceja has worked at Food for Less for 17 years. She says, Food for Less is part of a huge, profitable corporation that refuses to pay its workers fairly. Food for Less insists on providing us fewer hours of work, contributing less to our health care, and generally making it more difficult for us to make ends meet. We need your help to get a fair deal that helps support our families, she asks. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Raina Menashe.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. California State Parks is proposing to remove 672 acres of wilderness designation in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park here in East County. A preliminary general plan and draft environmental impact report for the park is now available for public review. The 45-day public review period is open now and closes on October 6th. At earlier public meetings, members of the public raised a variety of concerns, including availability of horse camps, hiking trails, and mountain biking opportunities, loss of biodiversity in the forest, bulldozing in fire-damaged areas, fire protection, and reforestation, among other concerns. Details are available on the Cuyamaca Rancho State Park General Plan webpage. All comments must be postmarked or emailed by October 6th. You can also find information on how to submit your comments at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Living section. A final opportunity for comment on the preliminary general plan and draft EIR will occur at the State Park and Recreation Commission meeting currently scheduled for November 14th in San Diego. At this meeting, the commission will vote on whether or not to approve the new general plan.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. July, August, and right into Labor Day, we use our barbecue grills more than any other months. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine. I'm here with our editor, Miriam Raftery, and we're going to talk about some ways to keep cool during the hot summer weeks.
Well, there's a lot of ways to stay cool in East County, Ed, and we've got some things today, whether you're old or young or you've got kids or you just want to go out and have a good time. There's an awful lot of options to beat the heat. One of my favorites is the bowling alleys. I know that's kind of an old-fashioned sport, but some of these bowling alleys now, they even have things like galactic bowling or cosmic bowling where you go in and they have the mist and the colored lights, and it's kind of a fun way to stay cool. There's one at Viejas. There's another one at Parkway Bowl, maybe some others.
Yeah, and then that's good for the kids, too. They got the bumper bowling in there, and then there's always, you know, some video games and some air hockey, things like that in those places. So it's a good place to spend some time.
Well, there you go. Some of them even have arcades and things like that. Yeah, my dad was actually a champion bowler at one time, so I have a lot of fond memories of hanging around bowling alleys growing up.
All right, and then there's also the ice rink. The Hot Croc Nights has an ice rink, and you can go in there and ice skate. When I was a kid, that was a way that my family would beat the heat. It was, we'd all go ice skating. My sister was a competitive ice skater, and I just kind of liked to go fast and crash.
My daughter was a competitive ice skater for a while, made it all the way to junior nationals one year, and I wish we'd had this place close to home back then, but now it's the Croc Center. For those not familiar with it, it's on University Avenue, just a block east of La Mesa, and on certain Wednesday nights during the summer, they have family rates for ice skating, and it's a lot of fun. And another cool thing that Croc Center has is dive-in movies. This is where they give you an inner tube, and you float in the pool, and you watch the movie on the big screen. You can check our calendar to find out when those are.
That would be a lot of fun. Speaking of movies, you can always just go check out a matinee during the heat of the day. A lot of times they have discounted rates and discounts and things like that. So the movies are a great option to kind of beat the heat, at least for a couple hours, and check out some of the latest flicks.
Yeah, there you go. I think Regal Cinema in El Cajon is even offering $1 days at the movie certain hours, certain days of the week this summer. So those are all good things to check out. Now, you've got a young son, Ed. I bet he likes to swim.
Yeah, he's a good little swimmer. There's always the community pools that you can take him to. If your, you know, apartment complex or housing association doesn't have a pool, there are community pools. So you can go out and get some swimming in and beat the heat like that. It's always a healthy outdoor activity during the hot days.
Yeah, one of the best-kept secrets out here is that in Santee, there's a community center that actually has play equipment for children and a little water slide right in the middle of the pool. So that's, you might want to check that one out. I think your little boy would love it.
Yeah, and isn't there a water park in East Lake?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of Knott's Soak City, run by the same folks that run Knott's Berry Farm. It's a water park, and it is down in the Otay area, the inland part of Chula Vista. I know at Santee Lakes there is a splash park, and it's kind of a spray park, and the kids can run through the spray and get wet. And there's also a splash pop jet fountain out at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. And then for us older adults, there are several swimming pools at Croc Center. One of them's Olympic-sized, and they have all kinds of aquatic classes out there that you can take as well.
Yeah, and a lot of the community parks now have, like, water play options, too. Like, there's a park in Rancho San Diego that has really nice water play, and you can go and play in the water. There's all kinds of fountains and splashy things.
Well, there you go. There's also the YMCA, and there's gym equipment and all kinds of classes and everything from, you know, aerobics to you name it, that you can do in air-conditioned comfort out there.
Let's see. There's also the mall. I mean, we could go shopping, and there's, like, at Parkway Plaza, they got the nice big merry-go-round, and
lots of little play areas for your kids, and obviously all the stores and everything. That's a very nice controlled climate inside the mall there.
Yeah, all air conditioned and cool. Good place to go in the summertime. There are also some arcades around that the kids just love. One of them is Boomers, which is out off of 67 in the, not sure if it's El Cajon or Santee right there. And they have an indoor arcade with all kinds of games, and as well as some outdoor stuff like bumper cars and,
yeah,
and
there's
things like that.
My kid's favorite is at the Boardwalk. They've got, next to the Parkway Bowl, there's a huge arcade for younger kids with lots of ticket games and all that stuff. It's a lot like Boomers.
So. Yeah.
Those are both great places to cool off.
There's also one out at the Viejas Outlet Center as well, another arcade there.
And I don't know if this Boomer has it, but I know a lot of the Boomers have the bumper boats.
Ah, well, they have mini golf, I know that, and batting cages and stuff. Another nice way to cool off and have the kids learn something in the process is to go to one of our wonderful local museums. Two of my personal favorites are Heritage of the Americas Museum on the campus of Cuyamaca College, and they have everything from wonderful artwork to Indian and Native American artifacts. They have dinosaur bones and natural history things and gems and minerals and a really cool gift shop and a lot of good things. The other one is Mission Trails Regional Park. Have you been there?
Yeah, not to their museum, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a beautiful visitor center. The museum, it's two-story, and when you walk up inside of it, they have cool animal sounds. So you'll hear owls hooting and, you know, different kinds of wildlife, and they have, you know, stuffed mountain lion and a lot of Native American history and exhibits as well. So it's really a very fascinating place to go.
Yeah, and what about live shows? I know some of the area Indian gaming areas have some live shows and things like that.
Yeah, they do. Sequan, for example, has a live up-close theater, and they get a lot of fairly well-known headliners in there sometimes, and that's a place you can check out. There is the Viejas Arena at the campus of San Diego State University that gets really big names. I know if you look the next few months, they've got like the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac coming up in the fall, some huge names. There is, closer to home, we have the Young Adults Theater in Spring Valley, which does a lot of musical entertainment, and also there are musical shows that are produced or staged atop Mount Helix in the evenings. And that is just a wonderful way to sit up there as the sun's going down and cool off and really enjoy catch a breeze.
Yeah, and then a place that I'll take my son, especially when he's a little younger, was the library, because they do those book readings, and which is always great for the little ones.
Oh, yeah. And for older adults, older kids and adults as well, they now have an acoustic concert series that's produced by the San Diego County Libraries, and you can go on the county library site and find out who's going to be playing when in your neighborhood library.
And something else for the older crowds is the senior centers. I know they do a lot of card games and have lots of fun things and TV to watch and stuff like that. So.
They do. I know La Mesa's Senior Center, they even do field trips. They'll take them all over the place for fun stuff. And the other thing is community centers, which offer classes and crafts. And there are things for children as well as teenagers and adults of all ages there. Exercise classes and, you know, you name it, yoga. Some really fun things to do there.
And also, you can always catch a meal at a nice air-conditioned restaurant. Maybe catch one with the nice outdoor views. You can look at everyone else sweating outside while you sit in a nice air-conditioned restaurant and have a meal.
Well, there you go. There's even places where you can kind of have it both ways, indoor, outdoor. Downtown El Cajon, for example, on Friday nights, they do dinner and a concert, so you can sit there in some of the cafes that Downtown Cafe, for instance, has windows that open to the outdoors, so it's kind of open air, but there's still air conditioning inside, and yet you can catch the concert going on just across the street. Or you can bring a blanket and sit out on the lawn and enjoy the music for free, not only in El Cajon, but they have them La Mesa Sundays at 6 in Harry Griffith Park, Santee at the Trolley Center has one in the evening. So again, as the sun goes down, you can get outdoors out of your hot house and enjoy some good music, and that's all free. And in addition to restaurants, a lot of people like to go take in a sports game. There's more and more restaurants and sports bars around now where you can go in and cool off and enjoy your favorite football or baseball game or whatever sport you like.
Yeah, and also our East County Mountains, if you check the weather report, I know that there's some good hiking out there. It might be a little cooler out in those mountains. Just make sure you're well aware of any kind of dangers with time of day, with mountain lions and things like that.
Yeah, it can be a long, hot hike and you need to carry a lot of water. There's, you know, some of the waterfalls are very popular trails out there, but it's a long way to get there and you need to check with the Forest Service and make sure that there is still water. No diving or anything, but there are some that have pools at the bottom that you can swim in out at Cedar Creek Falls, for example, this time of year, and or at least certain times of the year. And also, a little shorter hike is the Green Valley Falls, where you can at least go down and dip your feet in the water and cool off a little bit, and that's a really lovely trail, and it's very accessible.
Yes, and remember, do not hike alone, especially in the heat.
That's right, and carry plenty of water with you and a cell phone. So that wraps up our discussion of some cool ways to beat the heat here in East County.
Yep, stay cool, East County.
Every minute that a victim of sudden cardiac arrest awaits CPR, their chance of survival drops by up to 10%. After 4 to 6 minutes, brain damage begins to occur. After 10 minutes, it's often too late. Few resuscitation attempts succeed. Now the County of San Diego is teaming up with PulsePoint, a new smartphone application that lets citizens who are trained in CPR know when their help is needed, so they can step in during those crucial moments before a paramedic arrives. It is now available throughout the San Diego region thanks to the County and City of San Diego, along with a coalition of local agencies countywide. Supervisor Ron Roberts states, "Sudden cardiac arrest is a leading cause of death in our country, and just 8% of those who experience it survive. We can do better. This application can help us change these grim statistics," he adds. The San Diego region is one of the largest in the U.S. to launch the application, joining over 500 other localities nationwide already using PulsePoint. When a 911 call for a sudden cardiac arrest comes in, an alert goes to the application at the same time that the first responders are dispatched. Citizens who are signed up for the app and nearby the incident are notified of the location of the victim as well as the closest publicly accessible defibrillators. How effective the app will be in our community will depend on citizen involvement. You're encouraged to get training in CPR and sign up to receive the alerts. The American Red Cross, American Heart Association, and San Diego Project Heartbeat provide trainings throughout the year. You never know when a heart attack will occur. You just may help save someone's life. You can download the application through pulsepoint.org. So for a health report from East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.